all the honorable members who are here today, and the representatives from the Department of Transport who have attended this meeting today. We would have normally introduced ourselves, but we take it for granted that we are known and well known for that matter. So anybody does not know us, it means not a member in good standing of this family of transport. DG, welcome to this meeting. The agenda of the meeting today, I'm sure it's in front of you, honorable members. It's mainly briefing by the Department of Transport on the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. Number two will be consideration and adoption of the minutes of proceedings and committee reports, and that is it. Are we okay with the minutes? Thank you very much. Secretary, who has apologized?
Chair, there was an apology from Mr. Yabo, who's writing exams, and from the staff, Dr. Ngesi, who had an emergency this morning.
Okay. And Honorable Lolo Chungwe? Yeah, that is a standing matter. It must come from Secretary.
I was just trying to remind,
The Secretary.
Because
Viva completely. Okay. At this present moment, I think it will be the right thing to do to give hand over to the department to brief us on the bill that they are introducing. And over to you, DG, and your team.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, we are today tabling before the committee the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. The bill seeks to amend Act Number 13 of 2009, the Civil Aviation Act. As you may know, this act regulates civil aviation in our country, and it has served us well since its promulgation as a successor to an earlier law that had been protecting the skies of our country as far as civil aviation is concerned. In its nature, we say it has served us well till now, primarily because South Africa's civil aviation record is quite outstanding comparable to other countries from developing and developed nations, and equally the regulator as well as the agencies of the state operating in this remain relatively quite stable, and they've been performing their functions quite outstandingly. Financially, they are the most stable, and they are, from a mandate point of view, executing their mandate well. Having given that background, the civil aviation globally is governed by the protocols that get to be ratified by states and state parties, and in this case ourselves. We are also a member of the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, and we hold also executive seats on ICAO, and we have been participating in these protocols. Every now and then, ICAO does get to meet at the General Assembly to consider new regulations and to consider new practice matters related to safety in the skyways, and member countries are required to ratify and to update their domestic laws and to domesticate the international protocols that have been Assam Chapter and Roche Fund thereby. You may be aware that former ministers have ratified some of the new determinations made by ACAO, and of recent Minister Mbalula has also participated in the General Assembly where some of the new determinations were also made. We are required in terms of the ACAO timetable to bring to domesticate those determinations as part of our work. This makes integration of international space much more easier, and we have also sought to utilize the amendments to the bill to bring into certainty matters that we have picked up from practice as we are implementing the law, practicalities that have come across, and also the emerging trends globally that are there. Effectively, we seek with this amendment bill, one of the major amendments we are bringing in place would be the creation of a new aviation safety investigation board. This new board will seek to investigate accidents much more thoroughly, and it's a service we also wish to commercialize for the rest of the continent. We are participants in the various declarations of the AU in this regard, and particularly the Yamoussoukro Declaration, in which we are adjoined as a state party, that we will open up the airways of Africa. And equally in this regard, South Africa has been designated to take the leadership role in that declaration. And with it, we have already seen that one of our entities, the ATNS, the Air Traffic Navigation Services, has actually now is in control of 10% of the world's airspace. And it's bound to grow as more African countries sign up to the Yamoussoukro Declaration. And this will mean our law needs to now become a bit more robust about what we can do on that. And we are also set to be the lead investigator for aviation accidents on the African continent. Currently, globally, there are about six of the lead investigation boards, and with the American National Transportation Investigation Board being the global lead player, accounting for investigations of almost 60% of all global accidents. And even here in South Africa, we have been utilizing the services of that board as it is accredited by ACAO. But we are also quite aware of the fact that the Americans rely mostly on the services provided by South African experts whenever they come to investigate an accident. We too can utilize the expertise ourselves and seek the accreditation of ACAO, and this bill and the amendment will allow us to be able to do exactly that. The second issue is to extend the mandate of the South African Civil Aviation Authority as the regulator of our country for airspace to be able to now perform an environmental protection oversight function, which currently it finds itself quite unable to enforce the players as well as the operators within the sector to be compliant. We must adjoin the Green Scorpions in environmental affairs to be the ones who get to investigate and attest this, but we think that to streamline services and to link this to conditions of licensing, the SACAR needs to be given this notice to be able to buy them to ensure environmental protection in as far as the operators in the sector. Again, we also seek to streamline the powers of the minister, as well as to streamline and to clarify the roles of the different ministries and departments and government institutions that are highlighted in the current law. There has been overlaps, and some of them cosmetic, but some quite fundamental. And if members may consider that the departments and the configuration, as well as the macro organization of the government, has allowed for departmental measures and movement of functions across the board, and the law now must streamline to follow what we now see and where we are. Again, we seek to strengthen the penal code in as far as the additional criminal offences in the sphere of civil aviation security. The current fines we consider quite inadequate for what is transpiring globally, and also with the review of the net joints, we advised appropriately that in aviation security, global terrorism has become a major challenge, and consistently airport companies as well as airlines find themselves on the receiving end of waving off potential threats. And in this case, we need to strengthen the penal code to make sure that those who tamper and who dare enter that sphere must find us ready and worthy to deal with such matters. On the issue of the enforcement, we also need to strengthen the enforcement arm of SACA so that violators of the law as well as of the code, SACA is able to link its biggest single stick, being the licensing, to link that for things such as people who refuse to pay fines and who don't respect the authority. We must be able to link those, particularly where aviation safety is concerned and where issues and directives of SACA has been issued in as far as getting the technical arrangements and maintenance of aircraft to keep our people safe in the skies. We need to strengthen the enforcement arm of SACA, and this bill seeks to assist us with that. Again, we seek to, as I've indicated, streamline the powers of the minister, but we seek through this bill to add additional powers for the minister to make key regulations related to this. And I think this power is a good one because as the determinations of the ICAO gets to be issued, we do not need to be coming to Parliament all the time for amendments. And if that is the case, we will come to Parliament every 5 years after each assembly to ask for amendments, and that's not good practice. The good practice is to empower the member of the executive responsible for the function of transport after each determination has been issued for that member to then update regulations right away and to be empowered to put those regulations in line with the ICAO determinations. Now let me move, Chair, to some of the key issues that the Act seeks to deal with. For instance, we are now bringing the Act in line with what the new code is of ICAO, and right now the new term for what was then called the Chief Executive Officer has become a Commissioner for Civil Aviation, and with it, these commissioners have been granted more powers from the ICAO General Assembly resolutions. Secondly, we seek to provide for budgetary implications in relation to this, and the new Chapter 4 seeks to deal with budget matters in relation to the operations of SACA. Again, we seek in Section 72, as I've indicated, to include a clause that allows for SACA to play a role of oversight over the environment, and in Section 77B, to also clarify the role of the department and in as far as its representation on the board of SACA. Of all the entities within the transport portfolio, it's only SACA that does not enjoy representation in this regard. The law now will be streamlined to allow for representation by a representative of the minister onto the board. We also seek in Section 144 to authorize SACA not to renew licenses in as far as people who fail to pay fines and who fail to obey the instructions as well as determinations issued by SACA. Now, Section 155 will provide for what I've indicated, the powers of the minister to make such regulations. We had consulted widely on this bill and the amendments themselves, and we had received a whole host of questions as well as comments and inputs to the bill, many of which we have factored in, and where it was necessary, we have also held bilaterals with the affected parties to understand where they're coming from and to share insights as well as to persuade each other on the appropriateness of where we need to be. And as I've indicated, agencies, both in practice operators as well as those who are aviation enthusiasts such as the Aero Club and so on have all participated in making their inputs. Most importantly, we have had lengthy engagement and a streamlined session with the regulator itself, the Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa. And we have also engaged with all the entities in the space of aviation on the government side. We have also gone to NEDLAC, as we are required to do so. And we have done an socio-economic impact assessment on the bill, and it was found worthy on the 13th of March 2017. Not much of the changes have gone in ever since then. And as you may be aware, we are now asking that the bill be introduced into Parliament for its consideration and process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Baya Amelia. Honorable members, the chiefs, I'm told that, let me hear from the members in terms of whether you are ready for us to deal with the motion of desirability, or still want to check some few small issues. Honorable Hansina, Honorable Mapena, Astogoze, Uketa Mabala, Mondise, Honorable, and Akbar and me. Is that all? Honorable Donald Florence and Honorable Makosini Shabangu. That's my list.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. We have been dealing with this in the previous Parliament in the fifth term, and therefore in principle we find it good and no attempt to obstruct it in any way. I think it's very necessary, very important. Just on two aspects which seem to have fallen away. There was a particular decision, therefore, to do away with two aspects. The one is the corporate governance plan, and the other one, which was also deleted, not in terms of what we approved as being the amendments to the bill in the previous term. This was then already an issue. It's just, you know, I can't recall that we ever spoke about this, so if you could give clarity on reasons why the governance corporate plan was decided to sort of phase out as part of the sort of framework of necessities. And then the other one, the compliance notices, that was the other, that's the other element which there was a clear decision to be removed from the normal framework. And then also, I'm getting concerned in that we have a similar situation with R2, in that there's a particular legislative framework, so that from this legislative framework there's a particular understanding of how the new circumstances will function with all its roles and with all its aspects. And then added to that, in a separate process, there are regulations which are type of sort of hidden for later and therefore a big surprise later on, which is how people experience this. And here as well, you know, we seem to be in a process where we would approve a particular legislative framework, but then subject to regulations that would come later. It creates a lot of suspicion, and my question therefore is it in this case also necessary to have the regulations later on, because there's always a particular interrelative necessity of, you know, how these things work and function. Regulations need to plug in a particular way into the legislative framework, so therefore it's rather important to have it finalized sooner rather than later. So if we could just have a comment and then a specific question then, is it really necessary to have the regulations later on this board? Thank you, Chair.
No, so was the cool chairperson and which is a Malunga committee. He which is a it's called a space of say department to Babumiem. Just on the objectives of the bill, I think the first one is yes, I agree that we need to to comply with ICAO, but also the supplement of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. What I just want to find out there, how will the board be structured? I see here that it will be an independent board, but also will it be a board so that the structuring of the board and how will it be funded? Will it also be, or will it just be a regulatory authority, or will it function only to serve just that specific purpose? And then also, will it also be under the Civil Aviation Authority? I think I've also, okay, I've just touched on the funding. Or will it be just be a directorate of SACA? And then when we deal with the issues of giving the minister additional powers, I think the digit touched maybe not to a great deal. You are saying that whenever there is an assembly of ICAO, and as and when it requires, the minister must then be given additional powers to make regulations thereof. But I want to find out what the procedure will that take. Will we have a situation where the minister today maybe goes to the ICAO assembly, or only when he goes there, or can he just wake up on another given day, maybe the Tuesday like today, decides to amend or to make new regulations as far as AC and as far as the SACAA is concerned, or will there be a comprehensive consultative process which will involve actually getting stakeholders which potentially might be affected by the regulations that they are consulted, and also how will that process how will the portfolio committee participate in that process, how do we relate with that process given the fact that the minister has now additional powers as executive authority, but now how will we as the committee exercise oversight over those regulations? But I also want to speak about the issues of still on the objectives of the bill of providing for effective enforcement mechanism. I think if there's one thing about this committee, we've all agreed that whatever we do here, it must be something that translates to actual service delivery on the ground and something that can be tested on the ground. Now, what then happens when SACA in itself, because here we are also decrying the fact that there are some companies which perhaps when they violate these regulations, they fail to pay the fine, and you want to be given additional or you want the bill to actually speak to them so that you can go after them. But what happens when actually SACA is the one that is in contravention of their own regulations? Where, for instance, if I can give you a small example, according to Regulation 139 of the South African Civil Aviation Act, Authority, it speaks about that before a heliport license is given, that the consultative process and a CEC be established, that a consultative environmental committee be established, and a consultative environmental committee, one, involves SACA in itself, they must be there. Two, the community that is affected, and then three, the company that wants to be given that license. What then happens when Saka in itself is the one that is actually not playing ball there? How do we then go and hold them accountable? As far as the play is concerned, I think as my colleague has said, we have no issues with it, but maybe if they can just give us directions as far as that is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Before you get in, we are now well drilled in terms of the times and so forth and so on. But also to say members must just check their phones. We do not wish to hear your ringing tones in this meeting. So please just check whether your phones are on silent or they are closed, because that has never been an issue. It is becoming an issue today. Baba Mendes.
Yeah, I'm Bonge Sado. Ngibingelele amalungu onke ephalamente, ama-official kanye nawo sihlalo ngokukhethelekileyo. Chairperson, there's only two questions that I need to. The first one is that of the
Remember, I can't hear you well. Seemingly there's another meeting in the house.
Is it okay now?
Is it left this one?
Yeah.
Or you can continue?
Mark. Thank you, Chair. Only. Oh, sorry. I'm Bulala. Chairperson, there's only two questions that I need to get them clarity on. The first one is the establishment of the committees. What I want to find out if what the reasons of establishing these committees, and then what will be the what would be the purpose of having those committees, and how many committees are they going to establish? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one, the power of minister. These powers are the power that is going to give to all to minister in consultation with the portfolio committee, or it will be just the power of the minister or the with the other ministers. Thank you.
Siyabonga Mhlonishwa. Akubare me.
Thank you, Chair. I want to start with a positive note. I prefer to fly SAA. Even after Mr. Jingle warned us not to fly SAA. What I would like to know is... I would like to know, Mr. Alec mentioned the name America. Although it seems to me we have got enough experts to investigate any accident, why do they make use of America? Thank you.
Why do they want to use America? It's a very good question.
Good morning. Thank you, DG, for your presentation. Welcome to all the other members of the Department of Transport. I have just wanted to comment and a question. I think this bill is a wonderful idea because it will, for the first time, South Africa will have its own safety investigation board, which will make safety in South Africa in aviation way better, because it will in-house investigations when there's minor incidents or accidents, and we are not reliant on the NTSB to come and meddle in South African business. The second is the environmental protection. I think that's a long overdue in the aviation industry. Aircraft industry is one of the biggest carbon footprint polluters in the world, and also one of the things that few people know, it's also the biggest polluter of noise, sound abatement in the world, which is very important, especially to poorer communities that always seem to be living next to airports. And they forget about the poorer of the poor that has to live in a squatter camp next to the airport and has to deal with sound that will rip your eardrums out. And this bill is for the first time it will comply to the ICAO. It will bring South Africa in line. That's the positive. It will put us in a position that from that within the ICAO legislation that we won't have to run up and down to change things every time. My only concern is that there is an old legislation that I don't see in the schedule, the Carriage by Air Act number 17 of 1946, that's not mentioned in the schedule. And can we have a time frame on this amendments to the Schedule 1 of the bill, proposed bill? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Shabanga.
Thank you very much. I think I'm partially covered. But I would like to know on page 4, the provision of establishment of certain committees not provided for in the current act. I would like to know which are those committees in a nutshell. Because it says certain committees. To page 5, the provision for the establishment of Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Is the formation of the board going to be as transparent as possible? We need to serve the people of South Africa as a whole, not the interest of certain individuals. I thank you.
DG and your team.
Chair, thank you very much. And I would respond to the questions that have been posed by members. And of importance is that also refer to sections in the law. The proposal that deals with what we have been posed up with. If you look in the actual draft bill, if you look at section 10 is the one that actually establishes the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, and it also carries within the manner of appointment of this board and the requirements for appointment of members as Aviation Safety Investigation Board members is carried in section 16. So you will see there that the intent really, the law says that for members to be appointed, they have to be committed to fairness, freedom of expression, openness and accountability, as well as to be entrusted with governance and public service. When they are viewed collectively, they ought to be or possess knowledge in the transportation sector, particularly aviation, and having duly considered the following factors. First, that they have the technical know-how in civil aviation matters. Secondly, that their professional standing is quite high. Their expertise or experience in matters concerning civil aviation must be there, and importantly, they have to possess special skills in here. So this now speaks to industry leaders in this field of aviation disasters as well as investigations. And it also says that they have to be in possession of suitable qualifications, expertise and experience in the field of aviation accident and incident investigation, or any other relevant expertise or qualification. There are, of course, exclusions of those that would not be allowed, and the disqualification is actually covered in Section 18 of the draft bill, and I will not go into the rest, but it is the typical exclusionary clauses that are in majority of the bills, that they shouldn't be an insolvent, they shouldn't be having criminal conduct and all of that. So this is the guiding framework for a minister when he appoints this. And if you consider the open and fairness of the process, it means that it has to be advertised. And everybody who has such expertise must come forward. And it has, this law will have to be read with other pieces of legislation. For instance, in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the minister can take an arbitrary act of appointing members. Those who apply and who believe that they are competent enough to have been considered, if they are not appointed, they have a right of review, and they have a right to ask the minister to provide reasons as to why they have not been considered. So nothing can be arbitrary in terms of what the framework and the edifice of our legal code is concerned. Which brings me to the question of whether the ASIP or the investigative board, is it an independent board? Indeed, I think with the previous codes, ICAO allowed for regulators to play the role of regulation but also investigation immediately, two in one. And often the emerging international trend is the belief that says you can regulate, because if you have regulated wrongly and an accident has occurred, you try during investigation of the accident to hide your own shortfall. So the issue of conflict of interest. And so they then, ICAO suggests for independent investigation with both outside of regulation. And I think if you ask me, essentially they have adopted the American and Canadian standards. The European standard is where the regulator and the investigator actually work, and which is what we have been following. And the American standard is where they are separate. But now ICAO has made this a global standard for everyone. So which means that even European countries will have to follow suit in the separation of the two functions. So how it will be funded, the law actually provides for that, for the funding. The draft act speaks that it has to be appropriated as part of the budget. And now you would see that once the act is passed in the next round of appropriations, our budget submissions will be separating the two. It will be showing a grant to SACAR and a grant to that. Right now, SACAR is, we have, since last 6 years, we have not been giving them any money because they are now self-sufficient. And through the Levies Act and the levies we levy on the operators, they've got to pay, and the portion of it will also go towards the board. Ultimately, the board itself will also find itself in a situation where it is self-sustainable, which is best practice globally. But we have to give it a kickstart grant for it to take off the ground. And the initial investment has to be given by the state. Otherwise, we will be sent to the ICAO tribunal for unfair practice of letting them pay for, which is quite different, because in the IMO, the Maritime International Maritime Organization, is an acceptable principle that operators pay for startups, but in ICAO it's a totally different ballgame. So I think we have to consider it that separate in that way. Which now brings me to the issue. Can let me answer the issue about the Courage Act. The offensive sections of the Courage Act, as well as all other related sections that needed amendment, were amended in 2009 when the current Civil Aviation Act was adopted. They were repealed, most of them, by the Civil Aviation. Right now, when we did a review of the remaining sections of the Courage Act, which now speaks really to the conditions of courage, the things that are carried at the back of the ticket, or the old ticket, if you flew in the old days, they still gave you a paper ticket. You have that, but even now, when you book a ticket online, it asks you to click that thing that says you have read the terms and conditions and you accept them. The Courage Act now deals with those terms and conditions, and people still click on them. So the law is still there, it's still valid for what it had to do in as far as this, but you also see that the Courage Act also contained the penal code back then. But with the amendments of 2009, the penal code was shifted into the Civil Aviation Act. So in this current amendment that we are doing, There is nothing uncomplimentary or offensive in the current act for you to come into the schedule of the laws that are impacted by the amendment. So only those that are impacted by the current amendment are listed in the schedule. I think that is the context of why. Why do we use Americans? Because although we have South African experts, the boards that are supposed to do investigation must themselves be accredited by a CAROSET. So in our case, SACAR, the South African Civil Aviation Authority, could conduct investigations because as a regulator, it was accredited. But in order for it to institute that, it needs the actual expertise. Those expertise, SACAR could have easily done that, but it's more coordinated. You just go to this fellow, they are set up, they are accredited by a CAO, and you say, we'll pay you, come investigate whatever. And they come here, they bring two, three experts, and the rest of the 15 other experts that are going to be there, they hire them locally. So, in essence, if you ask me, it makes perfect sense. And if you also consider those smaller aircraft, well, I'm sure you'll remember the aircraft in which the late Antigone died. Yeah. This one was investigated directly by SACAR itself. It wasn't so huge. That is a huge aircraft, you require all of this. SACAR could muster about four investigators and send them to go investigate the aircraft in the mountains. And they did that, they combed themselves in, they did the work themselves and closed it on their own. And they used local experts. So it is possible. However, if a Boeing 737 collapses in the Drakensberg, it's a mess. And SACAR's capacity will be tested to the limits. It will not be able to do justice to such an investigation. It will need to hire a board like the NTSB to do his work, and the Americans will come here and still recruit people locally. But if we set up our own investigative board and it applies for accreditation, then it can investigate all aircraft disaster irrespective of what it is, and we can build that capacity. There is a market for it. All of the African continent, people will tell you the air skies are not safe. They are only becoming safer because ATMS is taking over. They're under control and the monitoring of where the aircraft are, and the beacons that the aircraft are giving to, and also instituting the electronic airspace divider for all aircraft now. So with it, you can realize that we are building the capacity and making the African skies even more safer. But even for you who now fly SAA to New York, and even those who fly to Washington, we do not fly over the African airspace, as you know. We fly in the sea and then we go to Dakar, refuel, and then on Nairobi and refuel and get out again onto the. This will change with that. But if there is an aircraft accident, most likely that South Africa will be the only African country that has the capacity to actually do investigation in these countries, and we are building towards that future, as we have been requested by the AU to build sufficient capacity for that. And it is one of the resolutions in terms of the declaration, the Yamoussoukro declaration, that we have that capacity and we are utilized as a hub for that purpose. And that's why more and more countries are signing their airspace over to us. To control. You'll also be shocked to learn that a few European countries are also using our ATMS to manage the European airspace. So it's something to be quite proud about what we have been able to achieve there. In as far as the issues of the powers of the minister, I think the clarity is important in context of the legal framework. Why? Because the ministers have powers to make regulations. And the question is whether you accompany the law with the regulations. It's not a prescriptive thing. You pass the law and you make regulations to implement the law. Ministers can potentially, a lot of constitutional court as well as court judgments have come in this regard. And legal precedent is there that indicates that ministers can smuggle the powers that they do not have in the actual law, and they smuggle that via regulations. Where that happens, they are acting ultra vires, and their administrative actions may be reviewed and set aside. In essence,
you do write the regulations, but even in the regulatory process, when you write those regulations, you have to consult. You have to publish the regulations for comment. And everyone is free to comment at that stage and so on. Although it's also not a legal requirement in terms of our constitution and our processes of lawmaking, but we find more and more departments tabling their regulations before committees, even though it's not required. And it is becoming, by convention, good practice to do such. And I think that in order to eliminate a lot of court cases, because when you are taken to court because someone is unhappy with what is in the regulations, it also wastes our time and money. So in essence, we do not have a problem in tabling the regulations to the committee for discussion and comments before they are actually published. It's good practice, and it shouldn't be a problem. But there has to be a corresponding power in the law, and with what the regulation seeks to clarify. You can't introduce new powers by regulation. You can't do that. So I think we must give that assurance that can be the case. And I don't see how the state law advisors will actually agree to let go of the regulations and that they may be published. They are getting much more stringent these days after cabinet has had a series of losses in court over similar matters. The cabinet has also had to change the head of the state law advisors and has also had to jack it up in terms of his job, because it can't issue a certificate saying the regulations are compliant, and each time they are tested in court, we are found wanting. So I think that should give comfort in terms of what we are raising. But certainly you couldn't anticipate that we should come for amendments every 5 years. This is not the door which must be amended every year. Otherwise, we will be kept busy with legislation, and we ourselves will have to build huge capacity to deal with legislation on an annual basis. And right now, I'm trying to get all lawyers in the department who are dealing with legislation to assign them to other things. We can't be a department that passes laws every year. Right now, we have a series of laws that are outstanding. We must drive them over the next 2 years and get done, and focus on the job of implementation, not of lawmaking. That's the function of Parliament. On the other issue that is being raised about what power of oversight does the committee have over the minister on the power to make regulations up? Well, the committee may call the minister, it's within his power anytime, and question the regulations at any stage and say why this and why not that. That's the exact function of the committee, that oversight. So I don't think that should be a problem. If committee members see any regulation it considers offensive, they have every power to call the minister to come account before the representatives of the people. In as far as policing the regulator, in the example that was given of where SACA goes rogue itself, in the same manner, the minister is over the board and over the entity. And if minister and people follow through with SACA, and SACA is rogue, and his board can't resolve, the matter is escalated to the minister for his intervention. He has to intervene and see to the fact that the qualms are being attended to. And where regulations are being violated, it is the minister who has the power to bring the board to account as to why regulations are not being respected, or in the case, the example that's been given of where a CEC is not in place, but necessarily a license is awarded. That's irregular, that's improper conduct on the part of the board, and the board needs to be held accountable by the minister in that regard. And if minister also fails, same thing, the committee then must hold the minister to account as to why one of his entities is not doing things properly as representatives of the people. And now, why did we get rid of the corporate governance plan? The law must never seek to address everything. Then you must have a bulky thing. You can never write up everything, including things, in essence, that are things that are administrative and that should be dealt with by a board. In truth, the corporate plan of any entity has to be written by management, presented before the board. You do not need to regulate
such things in the law. It's quite over-regulation. And also the issue of compliance notices. We feel that these things, particularly the procedure of issuing notices and so on, are the things that should be covered by regulations rather than the law itself. So, and that's good practice across most laws. And the laws that, I've seen some laws even giving a date. So a minister who fails to submit a notice before a specific date, then he has violated the law. And it can be. Certain things should not be like that. I think you should leave them to the vagaries of administrative function, and they should be separate from the core law. And then the last issue that was raised was the committees. Our first, what specific committees are there at? Right now, there are committees of experts that we are utilizing. They are there for one thing or the other, even for inspections of aircraft. You can't have such a small body hire all investigators all at once to police all aircraft. So you bring them in from time to time, and they constitute this. But the law is silent about whether SACAR has the power to use third parties to do this work or not. It's a bit dicey. We have been acting courageously on the understanding that it is not forbidden. But you can also look at it pessimistically that it is also not provided for. So we simply want to bring clarity and provide for the establishment of these committees. And then there is also sections in the law which list, which provides for some of these committees. One of them is the Committee on Air Services Licensing, as an example. You need experts who can determine routes and route saturation and all of that, and they need to sit and advise SACAR as to the regulatory environment of whether to approve the granting of a license for a route or not. I think this is the understanding, but there's a whole lot other than the inspectors and all of that. There's a few committees here and there that needs to do the work, and they are covered in the bill itself. I think that's that. That's the questions, Chair.
Surely we'll arrive at a point where we will be raising our views as the committee. This process is just to table this bill. Thank you for the questions and response. I should have done this earlier to also introduce a legal mind within our midst, that is Advocate Quetta. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yes, sir.
A state law advisor. He also wants to say some few words. So let's listen to lawyers presenting the understanding in terms of the procedure moving forward.
Chair, the issue I wanted to touch upon was on the issue of regulations. Chair, the Constitution gives Parliament the power to pass laws. Now, Parliament, in terms of its oversight role, gives ministers, the executive, power to make certain laws like regulations, which are subordinate legislation. Therefore, Chair, Parliament has the ultimate power to make laws, and the Minister makes these subordinate laws, legislation, at the pleasure of Parliament. And Parliament, Chair, has a constitutional oversight role over the executive. Therefore, Parliament can implore or force the executive to come to Parliament to account for any regulation that the executive makes. Chair, it's a pity, Chair, the Act, Chair, Section 155.4, it states that any regulation comes into operation on publication in the Gazette, and this regulation must be tabled in Parliament by the Minister within 14 days of publication. Chair, this section, in my view, there's something missing here, because it doesn't specify here that Parliament or this committee must approve any regulations that the minister makes. In other laws, passed by Parliament, this kind of provision, they expand here and specify that whenever the minister makes regulations, the minister must come to Parliament so that those regulations may be approved by Parliament. It's a pity the Act Chair doesn't specify that. Maybe the Department may, or even Parliament, may later try and amend this specific provision so that there is no uncertainty, and it must be spelled clearly in black and white in the legislation that all department, or rather the Department of Transport, must come to Parliament when it passes this supporting legislation so that Parliament can approve such legislation. It appears at the moment that is not spelled out in Section 155, but Parliament has a constitutional oversight role over the executive. Therefore, whatever legislation, supporting legislation that the executive passes, Parliament has a duty and the right to call the executive to Parliament to account. Thank you, sir.
DG?
Chair, we are at one with the advocate. It's exactly what I said. The thing will come here. Even the section you read also says, it's just that maybe it's not written in the language you prefer, but it actually spells out that the regulations will come from Parliament, and only after approval they get published within 14 days. So bringing the regulations before Parliament or the committee is not an academic exercise. The representatives of the people know exactly what to do. But if he prefers a specific way, it is exactly the reason why we table the bill in Parliament, so that the representatives of the people are deluded. After it arrives here, the committee has to refer it to the Speaker and has to refer it to Parliament Legal Services. And it can be cleaned out in terms of the language he says, the clauses that must to be inserted. That's the procedure it comes, because our job ends here today. When we table this thing here, it ends. Then the department becomes a spectator to a parliamentary process until it is done. And then whichever way the bill ultimately comes out of, as an act that is put before the president for consideration, would have duly considered the views of the representatives of the people. And I think that's the whole function of Parliament. It doesn't have to be referred back to us to go make those cosmetic language changes. They have to be done here.
Okay, before we really dwell into this language, let's accept that the department has done its work, tabled the bill, whatever we want to say, unless they are really burning issues, we will say during the process, which is going to be in our hands. If you want to say we are giving the minister this, subject to the fact that he must come and consult with us, we will say, we will not come and ask from the department to say those things. That's my understanding. We will not ask from them. We'll sit here and give our views. That's how I understand it. And this meeting is not actually called for that. It's just to introduce this bill. And we say whether it is desirable or not, and deal with the issues moving forward. Let me hear Honorable Hansen and Honorable Mapena will be the last.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the two sets of legislative assignment that we would have to address here. How far are the regulations in terms of drafting so that one could get in, sort of put the two next to each other and consider, you know, completion of the whole process rather than to have to deal with a frustrating situation like we have with ARTO, where the legislation is done, it's signed off, and then, you know, implementation is hampered, hence the fact that we are keen for an improved road safety system, but then it's all subject to regulations that would have to be done, you know, after the Principal Act was then approved. So how far are we with the regulations to then also consider and to do this sort of simultaneously?
Well, my understanding is that there are no regulations currently, because we have not given permission for the minister to come up with the regulations. It is upon us to say we agree or we do not agree. I think that is the simple understanding, and DG, am I right?
No, Chair, the standard procedure is that the bill is debated and the bill becomes law. When those powers are defined, you write regulations emanating from those powers. I suspect we would be putting the cart before the horse, clarifying powers that virtually are non-existent, that's it. And I don't think that that is really good practice, and to insist that we train them in that way is tantamount to making us do the same job twice, because this bill may come out quite different from what we have proposed here before Parliament. When it goes for hearings or whatever, it may look totally different, making whatever we have written in the regulations quite irrelevant, depending on what changes. So I would, Chair, insist that we be not subjected to a procedure that is quite different. I've seen where previously, particularly with the Safety at Sports and Recreation Events Act, we twinned the regulations with the law, and we had to do the regulations completely afresh, because the original bill came out quite different. The last bill came out quite different from what was originally put through the system. And the regulations had to be written, almost 80% of them are new. So, yeah, but that's my take. The Parliament has every right to design a process.
We have yet to DG.
No, Chair, thank you so much. I think the advocate, the state law advisor, especially in quoting section 155, and really saying that it's not explicit that a minister needs to come here for an approval, but also I think the DG did say to a large extent that there's not a constitutional requirement, but it is best practice. But also, Chair, you see, when you say it's best practice, it means that even if you don't do it, it's not legally binding. So you can, yes, it is best practice. It is good. Okay, let me make an example like this, Chair. If you are in a bus, for instance, since this is transport, there's an elderly someone like Mr. Zwane comes, and I'm sitting down. And Mr. Zwane being a senior citizen, and the bus is full, I'm bound to stand up and give space for an elderly man like Mr. Zwane. But it's not legally binding. It is best practice. Even if I don't do it, I'm not guilty of anything. You know. So I think the state law advisor there, I think I'm to a large extent, I'm with him when he says that perhaps the Act needs to be explicit, especially Section 155. And I think the DGS, I think they are almost on the same page. Maybe the choice of words might be incorrect, but maybe just to emphasize that, but also that there is a standing undertaking by the DG that whenever, as and when the need arises,
the department and the minister will come to the portfolio committee, then we'll deliberate on the proposed regulation, and therefore it's fine.
I really wish to stop this interpretation now, because we will get to interpretations later. Advocate?
Oh, Chair, the only thing I wanted to say, Chair, was on the issue of coordination of the regulations with the NGCs, the Act of Parliament. Chair, once the Act of Parliament is passed, signed by the President, and it becomes law, it may be held up by regulations in the sense that it may not be able to be fully implemented because there may be regulations that are missing. So therefore, I agree with the DG Chair. At the moment, there is no power, the DG power of the minister to make these specific regulations. It's just that, Chair, I wanted to point out that they must be alive to the fact that there should be smooth and proper implementation of the past Act of Parliament. I don't think they must do regulations now, so I'm not saying that. It's just that they have to be alive to that issue. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. I think we're at the point where we can get to this process. I think what I've heard when you were debating, there is a general agreement that this piece of legislation that is called a bill currently is desirable. Let's do it properly. Let's have a hand and a second, a mover and a second, so that is minuted. Honorable Ramato?
I am moving.
You are moving? Seconded by Honorable MacDonald. And in terms of this presentation, this brings us to the end of these beautiful faces from the department. I have not released you yet. I can see you are very much in a hurry to leave this room. We will still meet as and when we need you. We will still deal with these issues that members have raised. What I was just raising for now is that let's allow these processes to unfold so that we then begin to raise what we need to raise properly. So we are here for the next 5 years. Otherwise, thank you very much, DG and your team. You are liberated. What is the correction?
Who is correcting?
Shay, can I ask a question while the DG is here?
Yes.
It's just around the request that we have repeated twice after the initial one for a comprehensive list of all the legislation and legal processing and so on, that we just have an indication of what we have in the pipeline from the department.
Let me assist you. I think you are right. DG, we're giving you 7 days to do that. You know, you have been saying here it's a lot in 2 weeks. Okay.
Yes, Chair. I'm sure you know the doctrine of separation of powers, and we work for the executive. So whatever we are to bring here as a comprehensive list before a committee has got to be agreed to by the leader of government business. We have since submitted our list of comprehensively to the leader, and we are waiting for his confirmation for us to take. So we can't do misconduct on our part. to list the bills we want to bring here until this office says yes. So the list is done. If I was to be asked to share it on a confidential basis with the chair, but not formally, we will table it even today. But if we are to table it formally, as the committee has requested formally, it first must be approved by the leader of government.
But it is also good practice, DG, that if we have requested the department to do something, what you are giving us as a verbal reply, I mean, if you have just put it down and say, on this request, this is the process, once the process is done, we will come back. Thank you very much. Because we understand it. Otherwise, you are liberated. Find time to eat.
Thank you, advocate.
Your own food as you go home. Don't go back hungry. Thank you. It should not be out of the meeting. That is many.
So many security guards.
It's not from the
meeting. And the question of that.
It's a lot of security guards. Very tired.
But they all security guards.
They said they must not say anything. The focus of the agency.
Okay, members.
Yes, I was.
Let's come back to the meeting before we get to the ANC. The meeting is still on. Thank you. I was just releasing the Department of Transport. So this bill will be published, members, for comment until 15 January 2020. And that will be done in all official languages, 11 of them. And then, thank you. Then, item number two, or maybe I should just address this thing very lightly. My request will be to members, when we have, especially when we have visitors, it's not one of the good practices that we converse within and amongst ourselves when people are present. I think professionally that thing we must really try and adhere to it. When people are here, people are honorable members, I mean, we must just try and understand that thing, the meaning of honorable. It's not honorable to converse within and amongst ourselves when somebody is on the platform present. So I'm just really requesting humbly, honorable members, that you should desist from doing that. Item number two, consideration of the minutes of November the 6th, time 10 o'clock in the morning. We were not here. The venue was B226, second floor, old assembly building. Are we there, all of us? Those who have iPads and laptops, can we get to our minutes? Those who still believe in paper reading, can you go to your papers? Page 1, any correction? Mshoni.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to check, Chair, because the chair of the day was Mr. Mach.
excellent meeting.
Mangu.
No, I know that from time to time when I'm not here, the committee elects a chair. But if I'm correct, the chair, the right chair of the portfolio committee was the chair of this meeting.
Okay.
Yeah,
Baba. I was looking at Pamban here.
Yeah, you're born of niggas of a pools. Away come of pools. Page 2. Page 3. Can we adopt the minutes?
Yeah.
Honorable. I'm looking for the right name.
Dollars.
Tolashe, I know, but the name is not Nokuzola. Honorable Nokuzola Tolashe. Moves and seconded by
Matosi
Ramadwa. Honorable. Now I am
Nda.
Not in Nda.
Nda. Ah.
Oh. So when I say thank you, I say nah, even to you. But you say ah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There we are. Right? Then I think the last item on the agenda is the consideration and adoption of committee report.
That's not on the agenda.
Now, honorable members, I think there is a report on the annual performance plans of the entities of the Department of Transport that we need to adopt. We have been with this report for some time. Let's have our say. The report is right in front of us. We are done with the minutes, I guess. Thank you very much. The report. Can we consider and adopt the report? Is sign language allowed in this meeting? I can see other members starting now to use sign language in the meeting. Any mover?
Chair, I move the adoption of the report for the Committee on Transport Annual Performance Plan.
Seconded by? Any seconder? Honorable Ramadwa. Seconds. Thank you. This brings us to the end of the first cadre. Thank you, and Alma. Travel safely back to your offices until we meet. At the plenary, when others are sitting that side and others are sitting that side. Thank you very much.
It's not unusual.